right. This is S4E7 of Fanacek, Robert Culp, part three. 3 of 3 on Mr. Robert Culp. That was the theme from The Greatest American Hero, which we will talk about soon, obviously later in the podcast. Up until now, we have talked about Robert Culp's career through the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But now it's 1980. So Robert Culp has been working in film and television at this point since 1953. That's 27 years. And he's still got plenty of gas in the tank and another hit show in his pocket, which again, we'll get to. So what better way to start out this decade than by doing a guest appearance on The Love Boat? Yes, the king of guest stars is doing the show that is basically known for its great guest stars. His episode aired November 8th, 1980. I'm going to go ahead and pull up a synopsis of it. Let's take a look here. Air Force Major Ross Latham, played by Robert Culp, his passive wife Nara, and an aggressive old girlfriend are on the cruise. At the same time, two brothers share the honeymoon suite. Texas oil magnate Mason Fleers takes the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders aboard to impress several of his clients, including Mideastern Prince Hassan, played by Pat Harrington Jr., who thinks that one of the cheerleaders is a permanent gift for him. And what a gift that would be. This episode featured David Cassidy. So there you go. Also, like I mentioned, it featured Pat Harrington Jr., Schneider from One Day at a Time. I love Schneider. I've talked about that several times. I'm a big fan of Schneider. So, wow, 1980 is already awesome, and it gets better. Because also that year, he does a TV movie with a great title, The Night the City Screamed. I like that title. I'm a fan of that. Let's read a little synopsis about it. We'll start off with some early synopsises. A big city blackout brings out looters, an ambitious politician, a police squad, and a young woman stranded after a party. An all-star cast. Well, I'll be a judge of that. Let's see if it's an all-star cast. Let me see. You got Raymond Burr, David Cassidy. Wow, we're early in this episode and already two David Cassidy references. Of course, Robert Culp is in this. Let's take a look here. Don Meredith, Linda Pearl. I like Linda Pearl. Vic Tayback, Mel from Mel's Diner. Of course, Alice in the movie. Alice doesn't live here anymore. I love Vic Tayback. I might do an episode on Vic Tayback. Who the hell was Vic Tayback besides just playing Mel? And I remember him in a Columbo episode as well. That's about it. Let's see here. It's directed by Harry Falk. This movie, so again, the movie's called The Night the City Screamed. It's labeled as having an all-star cast. Pretty fast and loose with the phrase all-star cast, but not bad. Directed by Harry Falk, he was married to Patty Duke at one time. I think she had several husbands, one of them being this fella. Let's go ahead and read a review of this movie. I made a note to read a review because I know nothing about The Night the City Screamed. Let's take a look here. An encyclopedia of acting talent shows up for this one, but yet he gives it a 6 out of 10. Let's see. Seriously? Not one single review for this mini masterpiece? That's an injustice which I intend to correct. I'm guessing that the city with the power outage woes is New York, despite there being no mention of the name of the city in the movie. But it looks like New York, so we'll assume that it is. The Night the City Screamed is a 1980 TV movie and was made at a time when these kinds of disaster movies were very popular. Despite the TV production values and constrictions of a low budget, this follows the same formula as the others. Introduces lots of characters. It's both cheesy and preachy in parts, but a patient viewer can probably forgive that because of the general campy feeling of the whole thing. And it goes on and on and on, but that is The Night the City Screamed. Okay, 1980 will give us one more Robert Culp credit, and also with an all-star cast. It's the mini-series The Dream Merchants. Let's take a gander at that one. I made a note that it, too, has an all-star cast. Here's the synopsis of The Dream Merchants. In Harold Robbins' fictional account of early Hollywood movie making, pioneer filmmaker Johnny Edge comes to Hollywood in the early 20th century with dreams and helps build the Orange Grove community into an entertainment capital. Let's take a look at this all-star cast. We'll be the judge. It's looking good. Mark Harmon, Vincent Gardenia, Morgan Fairchild, Robert Picardo. I like Robert Picardo. He was on the show China Beach. He also had a recurring role on Growing Pains, which will come up later in this episode. He played the gym coach or the gym teacher. Eve Arden, Kay Ballard. Let's take a look at Red Buttons, Mr. Robert Culp, of course. Jose Ferrer, that's George Clooney's uncle. Robert Goulet, Carolyn Jones, Morticia Adams, right? Was she Morticia Adams or was she Lily Munster? I never fucking remember. She's Morticia Adams. I get those two confused. Ray Milland is in this. All right, not a bad cast. It isn't an all-star cast. There we go. So now, in 1981, we're moving on. 1981, he does the TV movie Killjoy with a very young Kim Basinger. Also, Nancy Marchand is in this one. I like her a lot. And Anne Wedgeworth was in this. Real quick, I mentioned Kim Basinger. I met her once, man. I met her in Sherman Oaks, California. I was in some little shop in Sherman Oaks there. And I was buying a Christmas gift, I think, for my mom. And I was in line behind Kim Basinger. I was like, oh, my God, this is crazy. It was just she and I were the only two in the store. And I remember she took a long time to check out. But I was like, wow, this would have been... gosh, 2006, 2007, something like that. But anyway, there you go. That's my very interesting Kim Basinger story. Again, Nancy Marchand was in this and Wedgeworth was in this. We got to discuss her really quick. So she had, I remember her from a couple things. She was one of the many actresses who played Dan Connor's mom on Roseanne, John Goodman's mom. But they had several actors playing that role. But she had a recurring role in Three's Company, which is really how I know her. So her role was, she was kind of like a MILF, super hot, at least in my opinion, and she was really into Jack. And she was basically always chasing Jack around, always wanting to have sex with Jack. And Jack, of course, played by John Ritter, was always like running from her, wasn't into it, was hiding from her. And my young brain could not wrap my brain around this. I was like, all I see is a super hot chick in short shorts. She was probably like 40 at the time, like smoking hot. Anyway, never understood that. It always baffled me why he wasn't like, yeah, come on in, you know, shut the bedroom door and get down to it with Anne Wedgeworth. But anyway, I digress. Back to Mr. Robert Culp. Now it's 1982, and I feel like we are on an all-star cast run. So check out this 1982 film, National Lampoon's Movie Madness. It's not well thought of, but we will look at it anyway. Here's the synopsis of Movie Madness. A parody of film genres composed of three shorts spoofing personal growth films, glossy soap operas, and police stories. So let's take a look at the cast here. Peter Rieger, he's already in the National Lampoon's world. He, of course, was in Animal House. Later on in life, had a great recurring role in The Sopranos. I love when Tony Soprano whips him with a belt for sleeping with his ex-girlfriend. Diane Lane was in this. Candy Clark was in this. Who else? I know there's got to be more people. I'm scrolling. You think I would have like written notes instead? I'm like scrolling. Of course, Mr. Robert Culp, Joe Spinell, love him from Rocky and The Godfather. Olympia Dukakis, Fred Willard. There we go. All right, we got some players in here. Good cast. What else did I want to take a look at with this movie? This was like the second National Lampoon's film, which is why it wasn't really well thought of. It was the follow up to Animal House, right? But this was not Animal House. Nowhere near on the level of Animal House, but they were hoping to get that same kind of love. Here, I'll read you a review. This one gives it one star. Highly disturbing is the title of the review. Nothing about this movie is funny, and it makes no sense. The only reason to watch this is to see the girl from The Tonight Show get topless. What girl from The Tonight Show? Anyway, but she gets topless. Here's another 1 out of 10. Yep, it's that bad. Wow, I read about this movie, and it sounded so awful that I had to see it. And my gosh, I can smell it in St. Louis. Where do I start? National Lampoon's was trying to follow up 5 years later on the success of Animal House, but they completely missed the mark. I'll go chronologically with these short flicks, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, not well thought of. But we're going to move on, because Robert Culp did a lot of things that were well thought of. So now it's 1984 comes around. It's like nothing like George Orwell predicted. Totally different from George Orwell. Robert Culp does an episode of Hardcastle and McCormick, and then he does two pretty forgettable TV movies, but I'm Fanacek, and I need to talk about them anyway, which I know can be annoying, but I want to talk about them. The first one is called Her Life as a Man. Now, award alert, this gets the cliche synopsis award. I feel like we've seen a million movies like this. Her Life as a Man. To land a sports writing job on a national magazine run by a chauvinistic editor, an aspiring female reporter convincingly disguises herself as a man to get the inside story. And if you look at the poster, it's not fucking convincing at all. It looks like a chick with a fake beard. Bunch of people in this, Mark Singer from fucking Beastmaster, Lorraine Newman, OG SNL cast member, Miriam Flynn, you probably know her most as Cousin Eddie's wife in all the National Lampoon's vacation movies, speaking of National Lampoon. She was always Cousin Eddie's wife there. Joan Collins was on this, and she's also on the poster with the chick dressed as a man. David Paymer is in this. He's a that guy actor. He's also an Oscar nominee. I think he got an Oscar nomination for Mr. Saturday Night for probably best supporting actor, I'm assuming. Carol Potter was in this. She's the mom. She was Brandon and Brenda Walsh's mom on 90210. So how about that? So then later in 84, we get another award-winning TV movie. This time the award is for Goofiest Title. It is 1984's Calendar Girl Murders. Let's read about Calendar Girl Murders. My guess now, without looking at the synopsis, this is going to involve some calendar girls, some of whom will be murdered, others of whom, that can't sound right, but others are scared they will be murdered. Let me see if I'm right. Media mogul Richard Trainer is celebrating the success of his nude modeling business, I would be too, and introducing the newest class of calendar models to the adoring public. The party is ruined when one of his models is murdered. I was right, there's murder involved. I made a note to read the poster. Let's take a look at the poster. Okay, so it's like a black and white poster. Looks like a page out of like TV Guide, basically. So it's all these models, some of whom are X'd out. So I'm guessing they've been killed. The fantasy girls of the month knocked off one by one. January, February, March. Poor Miss April. Bum, bum, bum. This starred a very young Sharon Stone. How about that? Also, Tom Skerritt was in this. Tom Skerritt is 90, by the way, guys. Just turned 90, I think, last month. Holy shit. I did not realize Tom Skerritt is 90. Robert Morse was in this. He was Bert Cooper from Mad Men. The old, Sterling Cooper was the original ad agency in seasons 1 and 2. He played Bert Cooper. Also, this movie featured Alan Thicke. I've always said it's not a movie to have Alan Thicke in it. So that is Calendar Girl Murders. Now, we've come to a movie that not only has an all-star cast, but I've actually heard of it. And I've seen it. It's 1985's Turk 182. This was a staple in the video stores when I was growing up as a kid. Turk 182, also not really well thought of, not to spoil it, but here's the synopsis. Jimmy Lynch is angry because his older brother, who was injured as a result of an off-duty fire rescue, is denied benefits by the city. That's right, it is a union movie. The cast is basically the lead is Timothy Hutton, but you got Robert Urich in it, Kim Cattrall is in it, Darren McGavin, Paul Sorvino, Peter Boyle. Peter Boyle, of a Second City alum, he's done a lot of things. A great movie. Go look up Joe from the early 70s. I'm guessing a really early Susan Sarandon movie, but Peter Boyle is in that. He was incredible in it. I think he got an Oscar nomination for it. He later on would be Ray Romano's father in Everybody Loves Raymond. James Tolkien is in this. By the way, Everybody Loves Raymond is going to come back later in this podcast, at the very end, in fact. Spoiler alert. James Tolkien, like I said, is in this. James Tolkien is famous for two roles, basically. He was the bald principal in Back to the Future, and he was the bald... fucking captain in Top Gun, the one who sends him reluctantly to Top Gun, the one that gets all pissed off because they, zoom by, storm, I forget what they call it, and anyway, spill his coffee on him. That's James Tolkien. He's that guy for those two movies. What else did I want to talk about here? So this movie was nominated for two Razzie Awards. One was for Robert Urich, which is not cool. I like Robert Urich. I hate that he was nominated for a Razzie. I made a note to read some trivia about this movie because, like I said, it wasn't well thought of, and Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert had some stuff to say about it. Let me get to this trivia that I wanted to read about. Let's take a look here. Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert cited it as the initial example on their hit TV show of a movie that exemplified the idiot plot. The two critics would use that term often to describe movies where the main issues or problems could and should have been solved in a few minutes, except for every major character in the movie being a complete idiot. So there you go. That's what they thought of Turk 182. Let's move on. So also in 85... Mr. Culp does two TV movies, The Key to Rebecca and Brothers-in-Law, written by Stephen J. Cannell. Which, whoa, Stephen J. Cannell, that reminds me. I missed a huge project that Stephen J. Cannell worked on with Mr. Robert Culp. The Greatest American Hero. How could I forget? This show ruled, and it brought Robert Culp back into our living rooms each week. Let's discuss The Greatest American Hero. The Greatest American Hero, 1981 to 1983, 44 episodes. I will read you a synopsis, and then I'll read you a better one. But first, I'll give you the IMDb synopsis. A teacher is asked to be a superhero using a special alien suit with powers he can barely understand or control. So let me give you a better one then. I'm going to hop in here, pull out some half-assed research. The series chronicles Ralph... Oh, actually, let me go through the cast first. So, William Catt is the lead. He plays Ralph Hinckley. The show also featured Connie Selica, of course, Robert Culp, Michael Pare. Love Michael Pare. Michael Pare is the lead in one of my favorite movies of all times, Eddie and the Cruisers. Oh, what a great movie Eddie and the Cruisers is. Loved it when I was a kid. I was like obsessed with it. Michael Pare, of course, is Eddie Wilson of the Eddie and the Cruisers. Then they made an Eddie and the Cruisers 2 years later. Not so great. Not so great. Not even the music was good, but in the original, the music was great. The movie's great. Anyway, do yourself a favor. Go see Eddie and the Cruisers. I'm sure it's streaming somewhere. Now, I'm going to give you a more in-depth synopsis on The Greatest American Hero. The series chronicles Ralph's adventures after a group of aliens gives him a red and black suit that grants him superhuman abilities. Unfortunately for Ralph, who hates wearing the suit, he immediately loses its instruction booklet and thus has to learn how to use its powers by trial and error, often with comical results. So here's a more in-depth. Ralph Hinckley is a Los Angeles public school teacher of remedial education high school students. During a school field trip, Ralph encounters extraterrestrials who give him a suit which endows him with superhuman abilities. Also during the encounter, he is instructed by the aliens to thereafter collaborate with FBI Special Agent Bill Maxwell, played by our man Robert Culp. Their instructions are to use the suit as a means to fight crime and injustice in the world. Subsequently, attorney Pam Davidson, played by Connie Selica, who handled Ralph's divorce, also encounters the aliens. Through some coercion, she eventually agrees on occasion to join Ralph and Bill during missions. So that is like the more in-depth stuff. One of the things that made this movie so ding-dang famous, or a show rather, so ding-dang famous, was, of course, the theme song, which I opened with. Let's hear a little bit more of it. There it is. I'll jump ahead a bit. Great chorus. Let's see. Come on now. Trying to fast forward. Here we go. It's coming. Here it comes. So free. On a wing and a prayer. It's coming. Ooh, yeah, good song. Who can it be, y'all? Oh, yeah, I love it. Anyway, that song went to number 2 on the Billboard charts. So the song was probably more popular than the show. Of course, it's lived on in pop culture, too. Whenever I think of this song, I always think of George Costanza on Seinfeld. He used it as his outgoing message on his answering machine. Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Where could he be? Believe it or not, he's not home, or something like that. Leave a message. I don't know. It always made me laugh. Anyway, and it's also one of the things that's lived on in pop culture is the superhuman suit here, the superhero suit rather. It's still a very popular Halloween costume. It's rare to be in your 40s or older and go to a Halloween poster with your, or Halloween party rather, with your contemporaries and not see someone wearing the Greatest American Hero costume. So let's, I've already scrolled through the casts. Some of the guest actors appeared. There was Christine Belford appeared on it. She's from 90210 and Banachek, namesake show for me. June Lockhart appeared in the show. Blake Clark appeared in it. He was an Adam Sandler staple. If you look up Blake Clark, you'd be like, oh yeah, that guy's like in every Adam Sandler movie. They must be buds. The show, of course, was created by Stephen J. Cannell. Other writers included, for one, Patrick Hasberg. He's done lots of TV credits. I recognize the name like right away from the A-Team. He created Hardcastle and McCormick with Stephen J. Cannell. Created 21 Jump Street with Stephen J. Cannell. Robert Culp also wrote two of these episodes, including the series finale. Right, so that's kind of cool. Now, I got some trivia to read. Let me pull up my IMDb app here. What trivia do I want to read? I made a little note to myself. This is where I vamp as I scroll through my phone here. William Catt, again, he was the lead, he played Ralph. William Catt said that at the start of the series, he and Robert Culp had difficulties getting along and working with each other. Catt added that they were able to use that to their advantage as their relationship reflected the one portrayed between their respective characters. Catt and Culp were able to resolve their differences and actually became good friends over the course of the series, which is great because Robert Culp seems like a really likable guy. Another fun fact here is that DC Comics tried to sue the show due to similarities with Superman, which I thought was odd. And I've got some detailed half-assed research on this, which I'm going to read for you now. So Ralph's uniform grants him the powers of flight, super strength, invulnerability, invisibility, precognition, telekinesis, x-ray vision, super speed, pyrokinesis, shrinking, psychometry, which is holographic vision, and even the ability to detect the supernatural, which is odd. As Ralph lost the suit's instruction manual, his discovery of these different powers often comes as a surprise even to himself. Notably, while the suit enables Ralph to fly, it does not endow him with any particular skill at landing. So he frequently crashes in an undignified, though uninjured, heap. In the episode, later on, he displays resistance to fire and heat and uses super exhalation, so breathing out, I guess, to blow out a flamethrower or any other large source of fire. So I guess I do see some of the similarities there, and it goes on and on and on. But I think they sued unsuccessfully, but still, it's like you can't just say Superman has every power and then sue everyone else who has powers. But anyhow, that is that. I also made a note here, I've got something pulled up that I'd like to play for you guys. It's Stephen J. Cannell talking about the casting of Robert Culp.
I cast Robert Culp because Robert Culp has been one of my favorite actors forever. He did a series, it was a Western, and I remember it was a half-hour black and white Western, and I remember that was the first thing I'd ever seen Robert Culp do. And he was just so cool in this Western. And I told him once, I said, in Trackdown, you were so cool. And I love that slouchy walk that you had. And he goes, oh man, he said, the walk is everything in a character. The walk is everything. So I remember back from those early days when I was a little bit younger than Robert, and I remember watching him when I was still in school, and I loved him in I Spy. I just wanted him in the part. And when he came in and was willing to play not an older kind of romantic type of lead, which he is, you know, he's a very handsome man, you know, but was willing to play this guy in a bush jacket with a checkered shirt and just really a strange guy, you know, that he played for me. It was delightful.
Come on, my generation wasn't exactly sitting around listening to their hair grow, you know. We graduated from a little college called Korea, where they taught us the old-fashioned junk, patriotism and honor and all that stuff.
Original.
Oh, that was nice. So that's Stephen J. Cannell talking about why he cast Robert Culp. After the show, there was actually a follow-up show planned a few years after the end of The Greatest American Hero. I've got some half-assed research on that as well. It was called The Greatest American Heroine. So I guess it was going to be a female version. So during 1986, the original principal cast reunited for a pilot movie for a new NBC series to be named The Greatest American Heroine, which did not result in a new series, and the pilot was never broadcast by NBC. Ultimately, the pilot was re-edited as an episode of the original series, complete with original opening credits and theme, and added to syndication sets of the original series, and it aired on several local television stations in the late 80s, for which it is the final episode. So there you go. So it's kind of listed as the final episode. I thought that was interesting. Immediately after the beginning credits, the episode's title card is superimposed over a nighttime view of the Los Angeles skyline reading The Greatest American Hero before appending the letters I-N-E individually to the sound of the NBC chime. So, bum, 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 which is NBC. So it's Hero, and then the I-N-E. The pilot movie reveals that several years after the final episode, Ralph's secret identity was finally revealed to the public, resulting in his becoming a celebrity. This angers the aliens who gave him the suit, and they charge him with finding a new hero to wear the costume and use its powers for fighting evil. Once the transfer is made, they explain all memory of Ralph's exploits will be purged from the world's memory and be remembered only by Ralph, Pam, and our man Bill, played by Robert Culp. So anyway, the rest of the episode deals with Holly, and it's all bullshit. Anyway, that sounds weird to me, but there was going to be Greatest American Heroine. They scrapped it, and they just tied it into The Greatest American Hero. So when you watch on syndication, that's just one of those episodes. So, well, that is a wrap on The Greatest American Hero, but it is not a wrap on Mr. Robert Culp. So let's jump ahead to 1986 now. He continues on the path of TV guest spots and TV movies. Between 86 and 89, he guests on the following shows: Murder, She Wrote, Highway to Heaven, Hotel, The Cosby Show. On The Cosby Show, I'll never forget, he played an old friend of Dr. Huxtable's who had had a heart attack. And so now, you know, he's eating healthier and all that. And of course, this is, you know, kind of frustrating for Dr. Huxtable because, you know, his wife's trying to get him to eat healthier. He can't eat pizza. He has to eat salad and all that. But it's just kind of one of those episodes. I remember it as a kid. But I didn't realize till later in life that, oh, that was like an I Spy reunion. Because, of course, I was too young to know I Spy. But I always remember that episode of The Cosby Show. Robert Culp also in those years did Matlock. He did an episode of Who's the Boss. And then he did a show called Doctor Doctor. Let's discuss this because I had never heard of it. Let me pull up my phone here. Doctor Doctor ran from 1989 to 1991, 40 episodes. Here is a synopsis once I pull up the show. Dr. Doctor chronicles the exploits of four doctors who form the Northeast Medical Partners. After completing their Harvard medical schooling and residences, they all got together and set up their own partnership in Providence, Rhode Island. Well, there you go. Who's in this cast? It's not a lot of people that I know. Like, I'm just looking for names I recognize. Brian George, he's a famous Indian actor. Of course, I recognize him. Inga Svensson, yeah. She was in Benson. I remember her from Benson. Anne Ramsey was in this. I like Anne Ramsey. She's real pretty. I always thought she played Helen Hunt's sister and what's the name of that damn show? The Paul Reiser TV show. Shit. Oh, now I got to look it up. Oh, it's going to drive me crazy. Hold on. What was Paul Reiser's team? Mad About You. That's it. She was also in League of Their Own. But I always thought she was real pretty. Tim Stack is in this. And that's about it as far as names you know. But I was just curious about it. And so I didn't know Dr. Doctor. I'll read a review just so we get a feel for the vibe of the show. This person gives it like an 8 out of 6 or an 8 out of 10 rather. My very favorite TV show. Well, that's sad for them because it got canceled so quick. Dr. Doctor was a short-lived comedy series from 1989. And I still remember it quite well. I'm still waiting for this show to make it to reruns. You keep waiting, brother. It ain't gonna happen. It is my all-time favorite TV comedy series. I used to have to gasp for air from laughing so hard at this show. Never before or since have I found such deliciously funny dialogue. Of course, having the very comical Matt Frewer starring in it helped too. Never even heard of him. He was just perfect for the role of the bizarre main character. I would definitely purchase it should it ever make it onto DVD. Anyway, wow. Yes, either that person's very easy to please, has very specific taste, or maybe the show was really, really good, just no one's ever heard of it. Let's move on. Now, those were the TV guest spots of 86 to 89. All pretty good. Let's explore the TV movies from those years because they're like not so hot so, right? So 1986 does The Gladiator. It has a very goofy synopsis, not to be confused with Russell Crowe's movie, The Gladiator. This is The Gladiator with a goofy synopsis, and here it is. A road warrior vigilante avenges his brother's death at the hands of a crazy motorist by using his souped-up pickup to apprehend drunken drivers and others who abuse their driving privileges. It's like a hall monitor. You didn't use your turn signal. Bum, bum, bum. All right, who's the cast? Ken Wall. All right, I remember him. Nancy Allen. Nancy Allen, she for a long time was with Brian De Palma. Like, they were partners in life, you know, romantically. So she's in a lot of Brian De Palma movies. Notably like Blowout with John Travolta, Dressed to Kill, she's in that one. Of course, Robert Culp is in this. Stan Shaw is in this. I like Stan Shaw, African-American actor. Brian Robbins, he was a teen actor. He was in that show Head of the Class, and then he became like a big-time director for like Nickelodeon, did lots of kid shows. Rick Dees was in this, the famous DJ Rick Dees. Yeah, I think that's about it. But that is The Gladiator. 1986, Mr. Culp also did The Blue Lightning with Sam Elliott. He did a TV movie called Combat High, which I've discussed before. It was made by the same folks as Police Academy. The cast included Wallace Langham. He played Ratner in the Fast Times TV show, which is why I talked about Combat High, because I did a whole season on shows that became, or movies that became TV shows, and that one of them was Fast Times. Another person that was in Combat High was George Clooney, which is interesting. Also, Dana Hill, which I just rewatched her in something. Dana Hill was the second Audrey. So she played Audrey in National Lampoon's European Vacation, the one who had like an eating disorder. And then later she died very young because she had some physical ailments. But I just rewatched European Vacation. Actually, I just rewatched Vacation and European Vacation. Vacation holds up, man. The original National Lampoon's Vacation is still just pound for pound, one of the best, funniest movies ever made. European Vacation does not hold up. I didn't really care for it. Also, it doesn't have Cousin Eddie. I think it's the only one that doesn't have Cousin Eddie. So you have to have Cousin Eddie. So that is Combat High. Now we're in 1987. Robert Culp does Big Bad Mama 2. Let's discuss. But to effectively understand the intricacies and nuance of Big Bad Mama 2, you must first know and understand and breathe in the original Big Bad Mama. So let's talk about the first Big Bad Mama. Big Bad Mama 1, if you will, from 1974. I'm going to read you a synopsis. Circumstances force a tough single mother and her two daughters into a life of crime, and they quickly become outlaws on the run, picking up partners along the way and traveling to different states, pursued by the law. So the film starred Angie Dickinson, also featured William Shatner, Tom Skerritt, who again is 90. He came up earlier. That's the main cast of Big Bad Mama. I'm going to read you a review so you understand what Big Bad Mama was all about. This one is called Bibles, Babes, and Bank Robbers. Crashing cars, splatter guns, sex and nudity. Whatever else about Roger Corman, he never made a boring movie. And this one seldom lets up. Take Wilma, played by Angie Dickinson, and her two hormonal daughters. When they're not sticking a 45 in some money man's hapless face, they're stripping down for extracurricular action. I'm going to go watch this movie like right now with the lights off and my pants off. Lucky Skerritt and Shatner, except Skerritt's strictly low class, while Shatner's a little short in the guts department. But Wilma's got high class aspirations. So being a hardscrabble rural woman, she robs folks out in the open instead of behind boardroom doors. So that is Big Bad Mama. It's kind of a cult classic. Roger Corman made lots of movies just like that one. So now 11 years later, 1987, somebody, maybe Roger Corman, maybe not, maybe it was God, him or herself, but someone decided Big Bad Mama 2 needed to be made. So let's read about Big Bad Mama 2. The evil local land baron forecloses on Angie's place, and she and her two daughters must leave and continue their life of crime. A reporter witnesses their heist of a bank and helps them become folk legends by writing a story about them. So Angie Dickinson returns as Wilma. Robert Culp is in this. Danielle Brisbois is in this. Now, I've talked about Danielle Brisbois several times. She was a little girl from Archie Bunker's place, like the little Jewish girl that somehow Archie ends up raising because her mom and dad took off. I don't know. But then later on in life, she was in that band that had a big, they were like a one-hit wonder in like the late 90s. And I'm not going to look up the song again because every time I talk about Danielle Brisbois, I mention this band. I can't remember their name. I can't remember the fucking song. I'd have to look it up and I sound like an asshole. So whatever. Anyway, that's her. But also Big Bad Mama 2 featured Julie McCulloch. And we got to talk about Julie McCulloch. So Julie McCulloch, in my opinion, like when I was a kid, I had a huge crush on her. She's one of the most beautiful Playboy Playmates ever. I just really think she's beautiful. And her claim to fame was that she was cast on Growing Pains. They brought her in like in one of the later seasons as a nanny. Now, if you know Growing Pains, you know that like in season, I don't know, 4 or 5 or something, like a lot of shows do, they wanted some new blood in there. So they had a pregnancy happen, right? And they had a baby. But since both the parents worked, they had to hire a nanny. The nanny was played by Julie McCulloch, who appeared in Playboy. Kirk Cameron finds out about the Playboy and raises a big stink, because as we all know, Kirk Cameron is like related to Jesus or something, I don't know. Very religious, very right-wing, very self-righteous. He accused the producers of Growing Pains as being pornographers, and he basically got her fired. It was pretty shitty. It was in all the news and everything. So that is Julie McCulloch. So then she kind of went away. She didn't really have much of a career after that, but she popped up again in the early 2000s. I'll never forget. So it's probably like 2008, something like that. I could look it up, but I'm not going to. But I remember watching it. A reality show came out called Scott Baio is 45 and Single. It should have been called Scott Baio is 45 and a fucking douchebag. But anyway, it's called Scott Baio is 45 and Single. And it's Scott Baio basically and his fucking friend Jason Hervey. And I guess in real life, they're best friends. Jason Hervey was on The Wonder Years, which will come up later in this episode. He was on The Wonder Years as Kevin Arnold's older brother. And in real life, he's like a producer and he's really proudly married to a porn star, which I'm like, what kind of man marries a porn star? I guess he's dating one or having fun with one, doing cocaine with one or something, drinking with one, fucking one, but marrying one? I don't know. That tells you a lot about Jason Hervey, but I'm on a weird tangent now. So Scott Baio in real life is good friends with Jason Hervey. And this reality show basically chronicles Scott Baio's like midlife crisis of wondering like, why am I still single? So he starts seeing a therapist and I guess he decides to do like what John Cusack did in High Fidelity, go visit all his past relationships, and one of them is Julie McCulloch. I guess because Scott Baio was a legendary Coxman, man. He's like banged them all. And he visits Julie McCulloch, and I'll never forget, she's like at a bar or something, when she's sitting at a table with him, and she's like, "You're the only time I was ever scared of getting an STD." I just remember this Playboy Playmate basically telling him, like, you scared me. Like, I was pretty sure you were destroying my vagina with fucking AIDS or something. But anyway, that was weird. I don't know what made me think of that tangent. And I've not seen or heard from Julie McCulloch since that 2008 episode of Scott Bay Was 45 and Single. Let's read a review on Big Bad Mama 2, because I bet you probably forgot that's what I was even talking about. So let's read a review on Big Bad Mama 2. This one is called Woman Watching Cheese. Not even making that up. Okay. You watch this film because of the attractive women, not because you expect The Godfather, Bonnie and Clyde, or even Scarface. Angie looks great, although she may be body double during her sex scene with Culp. And McCulloch and Brisbois are barely clothed throughout. Thank you very much. Otherwise, this is a clumsily written, directed, and acted pile of junk. The action scenes are some of the worst staged up for the screen, with Glover, Culp, and others standing around unconcerned as explosions go off and bullets fly around them. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I might check it out. It might be worth watching. That is Big Bad Mama 2 and my Scott Baio tangent. Okay, 1989. Let's go to 1989. He does Silent Night, Deadly Night 3. Watch out. That's literally what it's called. Watch out. That makes me sad. I don't want to see Robert Culp in that kind of movie. Okay, so now we're in the 90s. Now, if I were Robert Culp, I'd start the decade out by doing a big hit show. I'm guessing Mr. Culp agrees because he starts the 90s with an episode of...
Thank you for being a friend.
Oh, yeah.
Travel down the road back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
That's right, I am. Bum, bum, bum. A key party. Thank you for being a friend. All right. Love it. Love it, love it, love it. So that's how he starts off the 90s. His episode was called Like the Beep, Beep, Beep of the Tom Tom. That's right, it aired February 10th, 1996. Let me go ahead and pull it up on my app. I will read you a synopsis of his specific episode because I think he warrants it. Oh, you know what? I don't even know if I have it here. I got to pause the podcast to find it. Let me take a look here. And here's the synopsis. Okay, Blanche feels insecure about her body after having a pacemaker installed. Oh, that's sad. You got it. You got this, Blanche. There is some interesting trivia about this. I made a note to read. After Blanche laments that life has no meaning, Sophia asks if anyone wants popcorn. A deleted scene reveals that Blanche's pacemaker could be affected by the use of the microwave oven. Later on in the episode, the microwave oven is missing from the kitchen after Dorothy and Rose donated it to Goodwill. This scene was cut from the DVD because of the threat of a lawsuit from microwave companies due to the proven fact that modern microwaves are no longer harmful to people with pacemakers. How about that shit? Popcorn and pacemakers and microwaves. But I think it's a great way to start off the decade. Episode of Golden Girls. Now, what a start to 1990. Now, then he does a few TV movies. One of them being a Perry Mason movie. Another being a Columbo movie. Columbo is back, y'all. He does 1990's Columbo Goes to College. And this time, Robert Culp is not the killer. Spoiler alert, although it's never a spoiler with Columbo because he shows you the killers. Let me pull up Columbo Goes to College. It aired, I don't even know when it aired. I could look it up, I'm not going to. Two college students decide to murder their professor during a class that Columbo is teaching. That is some rude shit. No big names in this Columbo, but there was a character actor that I loved, okay? His name is Stephen Gilborn, and we're going to go on a tangent about him. So pack a lunch, folks. Stephen Gilborn passed away in 2009 at 72 years old. If you Google him, you'll very likely recognize him from tons of 80s and 90s stuff. Some of his notable credits include Kate and Allie, Who's the Boss, Perfect Strangers, Get a Life. Oh, God, that was a great show. That was a great Chris Elliott show. Another Columbo TV movie, The Golden Girls, Murphy Brown. It goes on and on, right? I always think of him, though, from a great three-episode arc in one of my favorite TV shows, The Wonder Years. I told you it would come back. His episodes were all in season three. He played Kevin's math teacher, who was like relentless in his expectations, but ultimately proved you'll also be relentless in his belief in Kevin. His final episode was sad and beautiful, really. It was titled Goodbye. I'm going to try and find the synopsis because I know it by heart, but I want to see if I can actually find the episode. Give me one second here. Let me pull that episode up. Again, it was titled Goodbye. It aired April 24th, 1990. Kevin's grades in Mr. Collins' math class are not that good. After talking to Kevin, Mr. Collins suggests that he could give him extra lessons to help him on the upcoming test. Kevin seems to be getting better until one day when Mr. Collins fails to show up. Well, the day of the big test, Kevin shows up and Mr. Collins isn't there because Mr. Collins passed away. And Kevin, you know, sits there and he takes the test. And when he goes to hand it in to whoever the substitute was, he looks at him and says, "You don't need to grade it. It's an A." And I always loved that. So that marks the end of that tangent. So back to Robert Culp. Thank you, Mr. Stephen Gilmore. Now, 91 and 92 are pretty forgettable. But 1993 is interesting for Robert Culp. He does an episode of Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, which, like Walker, Texas Ranger, is something I've often goofed on but never seen. Just because I know nothing about it doesn't mean I can't make fun of it, right? But then he played the president in The Pelican Brief. That's kind of a big fucking movie. It was based on the John Grisham book, Julia Roberts, Denzel Washington. I'll never forget when I saw this. So at the time, I had a girlfriend named Katie. She was a high school girlfriend of mine. And we would always take the bus to the Riverdale Twin. I lived in the Bronx. And the Riverdale Twin was like some mom and pop movie theater, pretty half-assed. It was like $3 per movie. And literally it was called the Twin because they had two screens. It wasn't some big multiplex. And I never forget, we went and saw the Pelican Brief there. And there were a couple black guys a few rows behind us who were smoking some cigarettes and drinking. And honestly, smoking cigarettes wasn't rare. Back then in those movie theaters, you just light up a cigarette. And I mean, if they had an usher, it was a teenager. But oftentimes, they didn't have any ushers or anything. So no one was going to know. But I never forget, these guys behind us were drinking and kept saying the movie should be called The Pigeon Underwear. Pigeon Underwear! Instead of The Pelican Brief, they were saying The Pigeon Underwear. So there you go. That was 30 seconds of your life that you won't get back. But that's a big movie, The Pelican Brief. Now, it's 1994, and the credits are getting stronger, starting with the TV movie I Spy Returns. Man, I'm loving that. He's bringing I Spy back. Let's pull that shit up. Let's pull up I Spy Returns. Let's see, where is it? Okay, it aired in 1994, like I said. Here's a synopsis. Time passes and things change. So have Scott and Robinson. Scott has become a college professor, and Robinson holds a high enough position with the SSA. Actually, their children are now the agents. It's their first mission, and they must babysit some Russian scientists. But the loving fathers that they are follow them to make sure their babies don't get hurt. What happens next is a mix of action and comedy involving the CIA, the KGB, China, and old friends from the old world. I love it. Let's read a review. I wonder what the people thought. I'm a man of the people. I wonder what the people thought. Here's a review entitled, "They're Older, But It's Still Fun Seeing Them." Yes, folks, I agree that Bill Cosby and Robert Culp have both aged a lot, but that still doesn't mean it isn't a job seeing them again as everyone's favorite spies, Kelly Robinson and Alexander Scott. It isn't a job? I don't know what that means. This time, they are watching out for their kids and realize they're getting too old for this kind of stuff. Bill Cosby was the first African-American to be a star in a major TV show, which we know. Anyway, this guy doesn't give us much information. Let me read another review here. Affectionate Affectionate homage to a classic series. You can tell I struggle with that word. This flick is priceless. I'm in the afterglow here from watching it three times. Wow, that's some strong shit. I'm taking back my rental and getting my own copy. Wow, this person loves it. I'm going to go out on a limb here and guess that Culp and Cosby are really syrupy in love with each other in real life, because that's the sense I get from the whole project. Their chemistry is spot on and genuinely heartwarming. Well, I love it. You can't get much better review than that, man. Love that they did I Spy Returns. Going back to 1994, later in 94, Robert Culp does The Nanny, Lonesome Dove. He does Wings. So these are good credits, man. He's working. He's doing some good stuff. And the rest of the 90s would be a lot more of these types of credits, right? Meaning hit TV shows, but the movies are kind of like straight to video type stuff. So definitely more success in television. So TV-wise in those years, there's a Walker, Texas Ranger, which I brought up earlier, Lois and Clark, Law and Order, Diagnosis Murder. He did an episode of Cosby, which was Bill Cosby's last TV show, last scripted TV show anyway, where he played a retired guy or something. I guess Robert Culp went back and did that. Regarding movies, though, and the rest of the 90s, they really consist of things like, here's one, Panther. It's about the Black Panther Party. It was written and directed by Mario Van Peebles. Starred an interesting cast, Kadeem Hardison. He was Dwayne Wayne in, oh shit, what was the name of that show? It was a spinoff of The Cosby Show. What was the name of that show? Oh, that's going to kill me now. I know my parents love me. I used to watch that show all the damn time. All right, now I got to look it up. I'm going to do it in real time here. Let's look up Kadeem Hardison. Kadeem, A Different World. That's it. Boom. Nailed it. Okay. So anyway, Panthers star Kadeem Hardison, Bokeem Woodbine, Jodon Baker, Bobby Brown, Angela Bassett, Chris Rock was in this. So that's Panther. He did something called Favorite Deadly Sins. It's a trilogy of three short films with Andrew Dice Clay, Dennis Leary, Joe Mantegna, and Cassidy Ray. Cassidy Ray had a moment in the 90s. She was cute. She had a brief moment. She was a star of an Aaron Spelling show called Models, Inc. She was like, it was a show full of models, right? It's about models, so it's all attractive actresses. She was kind of like the breakout star of young attractive actresses, but then her moment ended. But that's Favorite Deadly Sins. And there's some movie called Extro 3, Watch the Skies, because I guess the first two Extro movies left us with some unanswered questions, I guess. I don't know. He did Most Wanted in 97, then he did Wanted in 98. So it goes from Most Wanted to just plain old Wanted. In 1999, he did an Eminem music video, Guilty Conscience, featuring Dr. Dre, which takes us to the year 2000. So Mr. Culp would have 10 years left with us. He's winding down, and I don't want to just keep listing forgettable credits. That's not kind or fair to Robert Culp. I love him. Instead, I'll list a fun one that he did all the way to 2004, and it actually started back in 1996. From 96 to 2004, he did 11 episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond, a show I mentioned earlier. He played Deborah's dad. So that was, Ray's father-in-law, basically. And there's one specific episode that I remember that I thought was so clever. So within the show, Deborah's parents split up, right? Her mom and dad get divorced, or at least they separate. And eventually the dad, played by Robert Culp, starts, seeing a woman, and they're going to meet her. I think it's like Thanksgiving. Even if it's not, let's just call it Thanksgiving. He's coming into town, and they know that there's an age difference between him and his new girlfriend. And of course, everyone's upset about it. He's dating this younger woman, da da da. And so he shows up with his new girl, except there is an age difference, but she's not younger. She's considerably older. And I remember thinking that was so clever. Like, he doesn't show up with some young chippy. He shows up with some like lady who looks like fucking Jessica Tandy, and she's way older, and like it blows everyone's minds, like, what the fuck? She's so old. But anyway, that episode always stood out to me. But we then lost Robert Culp on March 24th, 2010. I've got some notes here about his death. Let me go ahead and read those for you. On March 24th, 2010, Culp died at age 79 after a fall while walking near Runyon Canyon Park in Los Angeles. He was buried at Sunset View Cemetery in El Cerrito. A memorial service was held at Grauman's Egyptian Theater in Los Angeles on April 10th, 2010. Got a little news report I'll play here.
Robert Culp has died at age 79. Culp's agent says the actor died after collapsing Wednesday on a sidewalk outside his Hollywood home. Police say a jogger found Culp, who apparently fell and hit his head. Culp teamed with Bill Cosby in the 1960s TV series I Spy. Not only did the show's combination of humor and adventure break new ground, it was the first integrated TV show to feature a black actor in a starring role. Culp also played Bob in the critically acclaimed sex comedy Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice. His manager says Culp had recently been writing screenplays. Laurie Neff, The Associated Press.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you, Mr. Culp. It's been fun getting to learn your career more. You were always a guy that I just liked. Wasn't even sure I liked you. You just were always appearing in these TV shows that I watched, and you had a great face. And even as a young kid, I loved John Colombo. And I'm glad that I carved some time out of my life to explore your credits and learn more about your career. I want to say a personal thank you for all the years of entertainment. You seemed like a lovely man, and you left behind a great body of work. I also want to say thank you to everyone who's listening. So if you like the show, you know what to do. Rate it for me. Even if it's not a great rating, just get on there and rate it. Let me know that you rate it, and I'll send you some free FanaCheck stickers. So if you go there and leave a good rating or a review, let me know via email, FanaCheckPodcast@gmail.com. That is FanaCheckPodcast@gmail.com. If you let me know you left a review, I'll send you a cool FanaCheck sticker, or a bunch of them even. How about that shit? You can also hit me up on Facebook. I'm very active there. I am Real FanaCheck. I'm on Twitter, FanaCheck Podcast. And again, thank you for listening. This is oftentimes a labor of love, but I do, in fact, love doing it. So do me this one last favor. Please, please, if you do nothing else, stick around for the next exciting episode of FanaCheck.